This is The Guardian. I'm Jo Tovey, and this is the Full Story Newsroom Edition. Well, you could be forgiven for missing it, but a week ago, the Albanese government finally released its plan to crack down on betting ads, something many Australians regard as a scourge. To unpack this announcement with me today is Patrick Keneally.
Morning, great to be here.
And Mike Tisha.
Hi, Joe.
And joining us from Canberra, we have political editor Tom McElroy.
Great to be with you guys.
So usually on this show, we talk about the story that is really dominating the week, but this is a story that has had relatively little attention. Last Thursday, hours before Australians began their Easter long weekend, the Albanese government announced long-awaited reforms to gambling advertising, including banning ads in sports venues and capping them in TV and radio broadcasts. Now, this is such a big issue in this country. Australians outspend the citizens of every other country on online gambling, losing an estimated $32 billion to gambling each year, and the ads are just everywhere. Watch a game of footy, listen to a sports podcast, and it's just a constant barrage. Now, the industry has called the government's reforms a kick in the guts, but it falls well short of what a Labor-led parliamentary report called for more than 1,000 days ago, which was a total ban on all gambling advertising. Prominent anti-gambling advocates have said that while it's better than nothing, the government's response is timid. So, Tom, I want to start with the timing of this announcement, which was interesting. Almost 3 years after the report was handed down, at lunchtime on the Thursday before the Easter long weekend. What did you make of that?
I thought it was one of the best take-out-the-trash operations I've seen in a long time covering federal politics, in plain sight at the press club with the entire press gallery watching. The reason I call it a take-out-the-trash is because it was sandwiched in a big speech about the rapidly shifting geopolitical environment, fuel shortages in Australia, and the government's response to the war in Iran. And just a little splice in the speech covered these changes that we've been waiting for a long time, as you say, Joe. I think it was an effort by the government to tick this item off their list, be able to say that they're moving on the recommendations of the Murphy report, but flood the zone a little bit and make sure that there was enough other issues for people to ask the PM about and not dwell too much on the shortcomings of this package.
I guess what I'd say to that, though, is from the PM's perspective, he's gone to the National Press Club in a room full of journalists and announced the policy change. He would say, well, you know, I've been open about this. You've had an opportunity to ask questions. But I agree with you. It looks cynical. It looks opportunist in that way.
I mean, it's very odd that it's taken so long to come to this conclusion, obviously for reasons of, you know, the government has not wanted to make a big call on this issue, but also the parameters of what they were likely to do have always been fairly limited, I think, whether it was always probably unlikely they would go for a full ban. But after that, where they would land on it, it's not that complicated. Like there's a fairly limited range of things they could have done. So the fact that they've drawn it out for so long in a way seems like unnecessarily damaging to the government. In fact, they did come up with proposals quite similar to this. In fact, a bit more stringent than this 2 years ago, I think. Tom, correct me if I'm wrong. And why this has gone on so long since then, it just seems like the they're getting flack, rightly so, for the length of time it's taken. And I'm not quite sure what the political advantage in that was.
Yeah, the former Communications Minister, Michelle Rowland, now the Attorney General, had her own package of reforms drawn up in response to this problem, in response to the recommendations of the Murphy Review. I think they met with some serious resistance from industry, from sporting groups, from media organisations, and I think the government was a bit taken aback by that. So this latest round of proposals, which we're told will be in a formal response tabled in Parliament when they resume in the budget session, is not as far reaching and perhaps a bit more of a compromise. I think it's an example of a big, tough lobbying effort influencing government policy, the government going as far as they feel they can and some real politic getting in the way of high-minded reforms.
Do you think also, I'm interested in this because gambling reform is overwhelmingly popular with the public when we've looked at polling, and, you know, 80% support or 75% support, depending on which polls you look at. But why is the government not concerned about the public here and the backlash towards weak and perhaps ineffective regulation of gambling ads. It's something that parents worry about. That's, you know, people hate those ads coming up in the football, in live sport. Why is the government not really concerned about how this will look with the public?
It's also not something like an economic argument where there are clear winners and losers among the public. Mm. There are winners and losers among the commercial organisations, mm. but from a public perspective, everyone's a winner, basically.
And how many votes are decided by the issue, I guess, would
well,
be
I guess
point.
That's the other thing, yeah. Who's going to change their vote
exactly.
just based on this one issue alone?
What do you think, Tom?
Well, I agree with Patrick that most people hate the ads, but I suspect it might not be the top issue when people are deciding who they vote for. I think the government will have done a lot of research, be very attentive to public mood and priorities in the electorate, but also conscious of stakeholders as the ones I mentioned before, including some very wealthy cashed up interests.
Before we continue, let's just step back a bit to the 2023 report, which really kicked this all off. So there was a parliamentary inquiry into gambling that was led by the late Peter Murphy, a Labor MP. I want to read a couple of lines from her forward to that report, which really get to the heart of the key recommendation, which was a phased comprehensive ban on all gambling advertising on all media, broadcast and online, that leaves no room for circumvention is what is needed. Partial bans on gambling advertising do not work. So how does what that report recommended compare to what was announced by the government last week, Tom?
Well, there's a big gap between the two. The report, as you say, had a four-staged phase-in of all gambling advertising being banned. Instead, what we're getting is caps on the number of ads that can be broadcast in television broadcasts, certain times where radio advertising will be banned, restrictions on online platforms, and things like celebrity and sporting player endorsements and in-commentary promotion of odds for betting markets are going to be banned as well. So it's not nothing, but I think it's a long way short of what Peter Murphy's report recommended.
Yeah, and it's even, there are parts of it where, as we mentioned, they've wound back what was in Rowland's 2024 proposal. For example, I think in that one, the ads were limited to 2 an hour per broadcaster in general TV programming, and for an hour either side of live sports broadcasts. That's now seems likely to be 3 per hour, and only up until 8:30 p.m. including in a live sporting event, many of which go after 8:30 p.m. and only for 5 minutes before and after the live sporting event. This is from the Office of Impact Analysis report, which came out on Tuesday of this week, which seems to be, we haven't seen the legislation yet, but that seems to be sort of laying the groundwork for where the government's going.
I'm interested if anyone within Labor who supported Peter Murphy's report sees this as almost a bit of a down payment on reforms that could be, you know, prosecuted in future. Is this something which is a step in the right direction but can be built on? Even Peter Murphy's report, it was, as you say, Tom, it was in 4 separate phases. Does this get us part of the way there at least?
I think it gets us part of the way there, but I'm not optimistic that it will be a stepping stone to further changes. I think the government will be pleased to get this through the parliament, pleased to take credit for these changes, invoke Murphy's legacy, the legacy of that important report, and then probably try not to talk too much about advertising, gambling advertising after that. But I guess if you're an optimist, there's potential for future reform and look, all sides of the parliament have big ideas on this issue, so it's possible that there could be promises from other parties ahead of the next election and possibly even more plans from Labor, I guess.
Mm, the coalition had itself had a reasonably strong policy on this going into the last election, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I think Peter Dutton shared some of the views that we've expressed in this group today, that people were sick of hearing about odds trying to watch the sport, or indeed trying to watch Married at First Sight or TV news and having sports odds, betting, advertising stuff down their throats.
So how are these new reforms going to actually change how Australians see betting ads? And do we expect that to actually shift the culture around gambling? What do we know so far?
Well, it'll stop them seeing them in the stadium and on jerseys. If you know, this is sort of where it seems to be going, at least this is recommendations rather than legislation at this stage. They would restrict them to certain times and on certain platforms, online platforms, for example. You have to be logged in and tick a box to say you're over 18, and they would also have to offer a option to opt out of seeing gambling ads if the platform wants to take any gambling ads. If they don't have those options, then they can't take any at all. So there will be some control for the viewer, I guess, in that when they're watching sport on those platforms or listening to podcasts on online platforms. It seems a little unclear to me, at least, how that will affect some forms of broadcasting. Like, it's clear about, they're very clear about free-to-air broadcasting, live broadcasts of sport, but lots of people watch lots of different kinds of sport on various kinds of streaming platforms, on all kinds of different ways, on online, and there are, many of them are not live, like the packages of highlights and so on. It's not entirely clear to me how that will work, but I think that triple lock of logging in, being over 18, having the opt-out option will apply to those as well. So that is welcome to a lot of people, but in other respects, they won't change. Like after 8:30, during live broadcasts, they will still see unlimited gambling ads. And there's also no talk, at least that I can see, of banning inducements to gamble. Like, for example, that means like offering free bets to people, which, as we've done a lot of reporting on in the past, is one of the ways that people who are addicted to gambling find incredibly difficult to deal with, and are a real pull to drag them back into gambling when they're trying to quit or to minimize their losses on gambling. And that seems like there seems to be no mention of that as a possible option, which there was also in the Murphy report.
Do you see this shifting the culture, Pat?
I think that's a difficult question. The culture of gambling is so ingrained in Australian life. Like 50% of Australians don't gamble at all, not even scratchies. But it's so prominent in a lot of parts of Australian life, in leagues, clubs, in sporting clubs that are full of pokies, horse racing, TAB. You know, I can remember growing, I still know the jingles from the TAB ads in the 90s. And I just think all of that is so ingrained in Australian life that it will be very hard to change the culture, especially when we're only tinkering around the edges with these reforms. And I think that's part of why Peter Murphy wanted to see, and the others on the committee wanted to see, a blanket ban on advertising, because to really shift the culture, you actually have to do something radical there.
Yeah. I just note on the reforms you mentioned, Mike, Tim Costello, the prominent anti-gambling advocate, was very critical of that opt-out login model. He said not a single parent in this country would opt into their kids seeing gambling ads. That's why it's opt-out. Many people will forget or not realise, and it just puts a greater onus on parents to always be logging in, opting out of countless apps and sites, and that parents, you know, really struggle to keep up with a constantly changing digital landscape, and there's too many loopholes here.
I think that's totally true. I mean, I actually didn't realise until I started reading about this that there is an opt-out option on some apps that I already use, which I've just gone into and opted out of.
Yeah, right.
And also, just coming back to the culture for a second, I've spoken to teachers in classrooms where the children talk about the odds of football games and, you know, the multi-bets that they'd like to put on. And there's a whole generation of teenagers who have grown up with that, and that will flow through into adult life as well. So I think it's going to be a very hard thing to change.
I want to talk a bit more about the reception to these reforms. So the main gambling industry body called them a kick in the guts after they were announced. But my perception, at least, is that the response hasn't been as ferocious as you might expect if these changes were really going to comprehensively change the industry. What do you make, Tom, of how they've been received?
Well, I think it's notable that there hasn't been that much ongoing discussion. I think that might be an indication that some industry stakeholders have decided they can live with this, and any risk of a broader package with tougher restrictions would have been bad for them. So this is the least worst option, perhaps. I'd tracked Tim Costello's response. I think he's got real authority on this issue, and I tend to listen carefully to what he says. Interestingly, Peter Murphy's husband, Rod Glover, said that he thought that she would be proud of these reforms that are really kind of linked to her and linked to her work when she was here in the parliament. He said it's not perfect policy. Public policy is rarely perfect. But on an issue that the public really cares about, he thinks that she would be satisfied and proud of what's going on in her name. So I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how quickly they go through the parliament, if there's more political reaction, if people try and make amendments. I suspect we'll hear more from the Greens and the crossbench on this, but perhaps the coalition will be able to push it through along with Labor pretty quickly.
Is there perhaps a bit of a sense of resignation that at least we got this far, given that it's been so long coming that maybe people thought we were going to get, seemed like we were getting nothing for years there? That, do you think that's sort of part of that type of response, of it's better than nothing?
I'm sure the government's hoping that, and they may well be right. I mean, they've got the majority in the lower house at least. They might have more trouble in the Senate, but there may well be that view that it's better than nothing, which is kind of always, I mean, you do have to accept compromises in politics, but this is quite a big one. And I think that what people might find a bit infuriating about this, I think, is that in the analysis that was done of the various options on this, a total ban is way cheaper, way easier to implement. And the benefits from it, in that Office of Impact Analysis report, the socioeconomic benefits were modelled. They used modelling by the Australian Gambling Research Centre, and the socioeconomic benefits, which includes the health costs, et cetera, of people, problem gambling and so on, were way bigger, like almost double if you have a total ban compared to the option of the more, you know, nuanced things that we've been talking about that seem likely to be the legislation. So there is no economic argument about it. There's no kind of moral argument about it. There's no political argument about it, because most people are on board with it. There's, even in Parliament, probably most people, given a free vote, might support a total ban. So what we need to think about is obviously the lobbying that Tom's talked about is a big part of why people are having to settle for less than the total ban. But I guess we also have to engage with the arguments that they are making, which are twofold basically, which are that the revenue is necessary to support public interest broadcasting, like free-to-air broadcasters particularly, and secondly, to support grassroots sport through the sporting bodies. I don't think those are valid arguments entirely, but I guess you have to at least take account of the fact that that's the case they're making.
Mm. And that was key to why the Murphy report recommended a phased-in approach. It wasn't cut them off in overnight. It was bring this in over 4 years, so there is a transition period.
And look, there are certainly serious revenue pressures for free-to-air broadcasters, for journalism as a whole. Those revenues have been suffering a structural decline for many years. And, you know, if you're sitting on the commercial side of many of those businesses, you might say, well, this is one bright spot in actual revenue. It's been increasing. The Guardian banned gambling advertising in 2023. That had an impact on our revenue. It wasn't nothing, and it was an increasing amount of revenue we could have accepted, but for ethical reasons, we decided to go ahead with a ban. But that will have a significant impact on some media organisations' revenue.
This was a sort of the same argument that was run about tobacco advertising a long time ago, wasn't it? Like, it's not that long ago. I can remember seeing certain sporting events that were always sponsored by cigarette companies. You saw it on the field. And now we regard that as totally antiquated, kind of unthinkable. I know Tim Costello again said the idea that you would have only acted on cigarette advertising by restricting it to 3 per hour is pretty extraordinary. But effectively, that's what we're doing here, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I think a lot of public health advocates would see it the same way. There's no difference.
Mm. I think the argument for on behalf of the sporting codes is weaker. The two main sporting codes, the two main football codes, rather, are the AFL and the NRL. Are very big, quite powerful organisations that have quite a few revenue opportunities and more scope than the broadcasters, I think, to maybe not diversify their revenue, but to limit their costs. They're in an almost kind of monopoly position in their own markets. I think they could maintain their investment in grassroots sport relatively easily without gambling advertising. The broadcasters are in more of a difficult financial commercial position, I think. But I don't know. It kind of sounds disingenuous for them in many cases to argue that they are, you know, that they're using gambling revenue to support regional news organisations and important public interest broadcasting, news broadcasting, because they've been winding back those services relentlessly over the past few years. I mean, partly as a result of falling advertising revenues, it's true. But you do wonder about their priorities as well.
Anything you want to add there, Tom?
Yeah, I think, I mean, someone like Peter Volandis, the sports supremo from Sydney, has real sway both in the media and in the political sphere. Half the parliament is number one ticket holder for a club in one or two codes. Everybody goes to sporting events, as we've learned in recent months. The Prime Minister himself is closely involved with NRL, big fan, a long-time supporter of the South Sydney Rabbitohs. The place of sport in Australian culture is part of the heft that they bring when they're trying to lobby government, I think.
But also that fact, how deeply embedded sport is in Australian culture, is also used by the people on the who are proposing a total ban as well, because it has been so infected by this, by the prevalence of gambling advertising, particularly through the explosion of online opportunities to gamble and the ubiquity of mobile phones and having that right at your fingertips to be able to gamble all the time, and the effect that has on children, particularly when they're offered it. People love sport for its own sake. Mm. They don't always or often love it because it's an opportunity for gambling, other than horse racing, which is kind of in a different category, I think.
And just returning to the Murphy report, that was a key objective of that report, was that she talked about we're getting into a status quo where a generation of young Australians view gambling and sport as inextricably linked, and these package of reforms were seen as a kind of a key opportunity to try and break that nexus before it becomes permanent in Australian society.
Mm. I mean, nobody is suggesting we stop it, but Anthony Albanese is trying to suggest that people who are arguing against the ad ban do want to stop gambling per se.
Yeah, it's very disingenuous, that approach. It's not like, what people are saying.
Oh,
yeah.
People have to have a punt. Well, they can still have a punt, they just don't have to listen to all the ads for 24 hours a day.